Welcome to Comically Exposed, episode 22. If you are new, we are a podcast equivalent of a Venn diagram erratically located somewhere between OCD, mental health, and comedy. I'm Heather Nye, and my co-host is...
Gabby Blackman, so stoked on this intro.
And we have a very... And thank you, I should just say thank you. We have a very special interview episode with an incredibly talented person. They're an actor, musician, dancer, writer, and producer. And if you are in the Brooklyn area or in the great city of New York, you can probably catch them performing with Discount, Duty Free Live, Comedy Burlesque, Boogie Manja, Bar None, Improv, D&D, RJ Istifer, Super Casual, and they are the founder of the Sketch Comedy Collective, sponsored by. Give a big warm welcome to Christopher Marucci.
Hey! Yay.
Hi, thank you all so much for having me. I should have given you a shorter bio.
No way. That was awesome.
No, it was amazing. I loved it. Uh-huh. That's why I had to read it.
Okay, right off the bat, question. So Discount, is it pronounced disco out or is it discount?
This is a question that we've realized with our branding is a problem. we say discount. So much so that sometimes when people see it written for the first time, they're like, oh, disco is in the word discount. That's why we say disco a lot in both the title and the show. Because essentially it's a 70s themed variety show where we're doing a tribute to the 1970s, but we don't understand what that means, so we get everything wrong.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I've seen clips. It is amazing. Oh, man. See it live.
Are you guys planning on coming on the West Coast anytime soon?
Literally, as soon as the West Coast asks for it, we'll be there. Drop of a hat, we'll get there.
Perfect.
That's great.
Consider this the West Coast saying, please come down. I have no money. I have no venue for you, but like, let's make this work. You know what I mean?
We'll make it happen.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Party at Gabby's house.
That's right. And FYI, I'm moving into a studio apartment, so everybody's invited.
Party at Gabby's studio apartment.
Who likes having people in their personal space? All right. So, Christopher, welcome to the pod. I wanted to ask about your mentals, if that's okay. We have various flavors here. And would you be cool with telling us some of the flavors that you have?
Yeah, absolutely. So pretty early on in my life cycle was diagnosed with something that's called depression. woot over here. It came tied along with some chronic illness that I was going through when I was a teenager. So that's a little outside of the mentals, but connected through the whole body thing.
Yes.
And dealing with chronic illness there. But then... also, my therapist loves to talk to me about my undiagnosed ADHD in a way that she's pointing it out in a way that's really diagnosing it, but not quite labeling it in any way. It's fun.
That's cool. When she brings it up, is she like, so I feel like you have ADHD? Does she just trail off?
Yeah, just like a nice mumble. It's the mumblecore version of a diagnosis.
Which is so official, you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mm-hmm, why? Yeah. Why is she just not certified to tell you that that's what you have, or what's up?
No, it's truly just like more of a way that I process things. She's like, oh, I think this is something that will help you understand the way that you're experiencing life. But there's not really a problem that we think should be fixed. It's more that way, like helping me frame the way that I feel about things, as opposed to me seeing a problem with the way that I'm like processing things.
Yeah, that's so real. I just started seeing an ADHD therapist. I was diagnosed as 6 years old. Please hold your applause.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, but like instead of being put on medication or having therapy for it, I just got held back in kindergarten, so it's fine. But yeah, most of my therapy sessions are me being like, is the reason that I'm doing this particular behavior, does it have anything to do with ADHD? And then her going, oh yes it does. And then me going, that's nice, I like that, because now I have friends who also do it, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. My God. The other day I had a friend come over and she, because I was helping her on a project, and she walked into my room and she's like, this is, and she has never talked to me about ADHD before. She's like, this is the like dream room for an ADHD person. And I was like, whoa, okay, come at me faster than just as soon as she walked in. Just because everything's set up so that I can literally hop between ideas. Like, yes. I just need to turn and I can do a completely different thing.
Yes. Wow.
And... which has to do with something that I deal with called perfectionism, that is strong trait where I end up like I will slam my head against a wall for hours if something is not right. Mm-hmm. But if I can just convince myself to do literally anything else, then like all of that starts to like abate and it's just gone from my mind. And I'm like, okay, so I'm cooking with 9 pots on the fire is the way that my brain likes to work, and a way that I can process just anything.
Yes. I think your therapist might be onto something.
Yeah. No. She's pretty good.
Also, just like the visual aspect of your room, which is like an ADHD thing. We don't like cabinets. We don't like drawers. We don't like things where you can't see the stuff inside, because then it ceases to exist.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, my God. The back of my drawers, I've only ever worn the 3 shirts that are on the top of my pile.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Piles, too. 1,000%.
Well, it is a pile in a drawer, but I do love laundry. Laundry is my favorite task.
Really?
Yeah, it is something that I have had conversations with where people are like, it is shocking how much you like to do laundry, Christopher. And it's just every Tuesday you'll see me at my laundromat and I'm just chugging away, folding. And
okay, but I...
So it's like a structure. Like a structure.
Yeah, routine.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And then do you find it kind of like meditative? Like you have something to do, but your brain can kind of like go?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love to like call people, have phone calls while I'm doing laundry or listen to podcasts. I'm a very auditory person. And so I always like to have different like things going for different sensory purposes. Like if I'm doing something that is physical, I will like to be taking in something auditorily. Or if I'm watching something, I can do something that like... If it's word-based, if I'm reading, I can listen to music that is just instrumentals. I can't take in like two of the same thing, but I can take in multiple different things at once. Mm-hmm. And then it makes it all easier if they are like not clashing with each other.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
That makes so much sense. Yes.
Oh, my God. I should have known about the ADHD, ADHD thing when I was a teenager, because I would be playing a video game. I'd have my computer open with Hulu on it, and I would be listening to music all at the same time. Like, I would be watching TV, playing a game, and listening to music, and my parents would walk in, and they'd be like, what is going on? Because it sounded like I was having a party, and it was just me, because there was multiple voices on multiple different things, and
That's incredible.
No, that's incredible. I don't know if that's how I would describe it.
To me, it is, because it's like I like to focus on one thing at a time. But of course, I don't know if I have ADHD.
I mean, Gabby is. I don't either.
No, but Gabby has diagnosed me multiple times. So
I just like to give it away. You know what I'm saying? If I like a person, I'll say. Mm-hmm. You probably have ADHD, you know?
Yeah, this one's for you. Yeah. This one's for, yeah. I'm like, you can have this one for free, bud.
Exactly. Join the cool kid table. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we're doing a lot of stuff over here.
There's a clay project. There's a recording studio. It's all at the same lunch table. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about depression. When was the first time you had like a depressive episode?
I think everything sort of tied into when I was first dealing with chronic illness. So I was probably 13, 14 when I first started. I always got migraines as a kid. Debilitating migraines and just would knock me on my ass. Sorry. Also, I don't know exactly what the language is.
Oh, you can
fucking
say whatever you goddamn well.
We say fuck all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I dealt with migraines, the kind that had both like visual components. I would feel sick, just have to like sleep. Otherwise, nothing would happen. Mm-hmm. And then one day, I woke up and it was a different sort of pain, but it was still a headache, but it was just like without the migraine aspects of it, it was more just a concentrated, like dull pain. And then like that just stayed. I would go to sleep and it like stayed there for a while. So, and then through like a process of being in and out of hospitals, was diagnosed with something called chronic daily headache, which essentially just meant I always had a headache, and it like really impacted everything in my life. I ended up having to drop out of school. I self-taught at home, all these sorts of things. Was very isolated, but while I was in the process of getting diagnosed for that, I was over at the Mayo Clinic. Like, shout out to really good doctors, but my favorite person there, and the reason, well, one of the reasons why I later went on to study psychology was because it was the first time I interacted with a therapist, somebody that was a psychologist, was in there because they do a multifaceted approach where you're seeing different doctors of different fields. And the therapist was the person, I had never like related to somebody so much. They really, I felt like they saw me, but they also were like, I think you have depression. That was when I was first diagnosed with it. And it was, that was so clear, especially at that time. And like through all of adolescence was dealing with so many things going on. But yeah.
Wow. Whoa.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Please apologize for your lived experience. Especially when I asked you.
I know.
Point blank.
So this is your fault.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's all I wanted. That's all I wanted. That sucks. I am so sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's one of those parts of life. It is like, I wouldn't say I've loved that experience, but definitely has been a part of who I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you still get the daily headaches?
Sort of been living with the pain since then, but it's been different like modalities of sort of how I deal with it. Like, when I was in high school, there was a lot of like being on like pretty hardcore like narcotic drugs, just like pain killers, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. As soon as I could get off of those, I did, because I really felt like a zombie going through life all of the time like that. Mm-hmm. And so a big part of my current like pain, oh, I'm losing the word for it, but like my treatment regimen that I like will go about is mindfulness is a big part of like the approach, and just being aware of it, trying to like acknowledge it as something that is happening, but not the focus of everything, and allow myself to like move on to different parts. So as like a teenager, getting into mindfulness has been like a big, like shaping aspect of my whole life journey.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Mindfulness is like a big thing. I mean, for OCD as well. You know, it's, I mean, after, before we started recording, I meditated for a little bit, because sometimes I don't stay present. And so the way that I help myself, like kind of guide myself to remain present, is to meditate before, to kind of focus myself a little bit. And also I learned recently, which is interesting because you didn't say the word, but I feel like it's the same word that you're trying to use or something like that, is acceptance. Because that's part of the mindful practice of acceptance. But
absolutely.
I learned that there's a distinction between what people use acceptance as, meaning I accept this. There's some sort of permanence in the acceptance versus the mindful approach, which is accepting the moment and the emotion, which is like totally different than how somebody goes, you know, like, I have anxiety and I will always have anxiety, you know, and they think that's acceptance. But in reality, it's not the version that they're trying to teach, I guess, with mindfulness. So
no, absolutely. I totally hear you on that and relate to that. It really makes me think I remember a moment that was sort of a turning point in my high school age, where I was deciding like what I wanted my life to be. Cause at that point I was basically just at home all of the time, isolated, alone. Cause both my parents worked like all day, different jobs. And I didn't have any siblings around. So it was just me. And I was like, is this I know that this is the situation that I'm in, but is this the life that I would like for myself? Is this what this is going to be? And like deciding and moving from there. And actually like a lot of arts really is what like pushed me and opened me up to like being more confident in myself and my ability to like move into the rest of life. Dance specifically was the first thing I did. I got tricked into like taking a dance class, and I'm from small town Montana, so like not a big arts education like opportunities there in general. But there was one dance studio in the town, And I've shout out to Lewistown, Montana, the worst place in the world. Sorry. Lots of feelings about that. But there was a place called the Dance Syndicate. There hadn't been a boy that had gone through the dance studio in like 10 years. What? So they were offering like free dance classes to any boy that came because they just wanted to have like somebody to do like partnering stuff with the girls. Because there just truly had not been, since the dance instructor's son, a guy in the studio. And so I went and took a class, and then it immediately spiraled because I was like in free classes all the time. I was dancing and I was like loving it. And then they tricked me into then teaching like all boys tap classes and jazz classes. And so by the time I left, we had like 13 little guys in the studio, and it really like, ugh, I loved it so much.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. Yeah, absolutely.
Did we start with mindfulness on that?
Yeah. it all made sense to me,
but
yeah,
another thing with like OCD is and probably anxiety and a million other mental things is like, what is the valued activity? What is, how do you want to be spending your life, you know? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
what is the thing? Like, I hesitate to say goals because goals sounds so rigid and like grind culture, but just like my mind wants me to stay isolated. My mind wants me to stay under the covers. My mind wants me to focus on the pain or whatever it is. And I would actually like to dance. I would like to be, you know, moving forward on a project or whatnot. I don't know. Yeah. That's not related to mindfulness, but I just started talking and there we were.
No, but it is. No, it is. Because it's very ACT. Focus, right? Acceptance
and commitment therapy.
Commitment therapy. Yeah, why do I always remember like commitment? ACT therapy. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. I love me different therapy modalities. Yeah. I'm a big fan of like CBT is what my therapist and I love to work on. Uh-huh. I love identifying thought processes. I'm like, oh, this is what I'm thinking about. This is what I'm ruminating on today. Uh-huh. Let's see if I can stop that. Maybe. Who knows?
Do you do some rumination then?
Oh, absolutely. I definitely deal with anxiety and on the daily. And so I think a big part of that comes from like the major perfectionist ideals that are in my head that I will get hung up on really minuscule things, and it'll just circulate in my head until I can like break that process. Mm-hmm. And it can be a struggle on many a day.
And you were saying that like sometimes you just kind of switch up the task that you're doing in order to break that cycle. Does that work a lot? Or
it's one of the best tools that I have, just because I genuinely like to do a lot of different things, mm-hmm. in the first place. And so it helps me feel fresh, because it's like working out similar muscles, but in different ways. And so, because like to make music and to write sketch comedy, like they're different things essentially, but they are doing the same thing, which is making something. Mm-hmm. And so it like, I'm going through a different process to make something, but I'm still like getting that joy, that energy, that really like dopamine rush that I have identified that I seek. I owe everything I do is for dopamine. And yeah. Oh boy, that is an ADHD-er.
Yes.
A little treat.
Yes. Treat, driving force, reason to live, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Dopamine. God.
I love a deadline more than anything else in the world.
Yes.
Oh, I've not had as many like solid deadlines because I've tried to give myself space to work on like larger projects. Mm-hmm. And boy, do I feel like I'm in an abyss. Yes. just without like my weekly where I'm like doing 9 different things every week, I feel crazy.
Yes. Like even like getting rid of laundry every week, like how unmoored would you start to feel if you didn't have like that routine, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, a couple weeks ago, my schedule did get changed around it because I had somebody stay with me. And I literally was like, I might die. I've not done laundry. I I'm 2 days past my laundry day. What's going to happen?
Yeah, man. Deadlines, routines, all that stuff, which is interesting because like as an ADHD person, I also really want to rebel against any structure that like, first of mm-hmm. all, if anybody else puts that structure on me, they can go to hell. I'm going to get that done like 2 hours beforehand or I'm never going to do it. But even yeah. structures that I've put on myself, even my own routine, then I'm like, well, you know what? I'm not going to aqua aerobics today, even though I go every single day. And then I pay the price because my mentals go down pretty quickly if I don't hang out with my senior citizens.
I feel that dance classes are that same way for me in my routine. Like I try to set something up that is like a weekly thing that is just for me. And like one I do love specifically dance because it's so it's so your whole body, your mm-hmm. whole mind, like everything is being used in it. So because my focus has to be on like both learning and listening to the music and feeling, and then also my entire body is moving, so like I can't be anywhere but that moment. And so it really is something that is so such a perfect way to like cheat to get in the moment, is to like take a dance class or like a physical like movement thing, anything at all. I recommend dance because it's nothing better in the world than like a dance class, because you're around people, you're all moving together and there's music. Oh, there's something almost spiritual about like being in a room with people that are all doing the same thing.
Yes.
And having fun. And it's not like the workout dance classes are one thing, but like a dance class where people are just like moving for the art of moving. Oh, it's so good.
That's incredible. What kind of dance?
Right now I take a lot of like hip hop and house classes. Awesome. Just because it's the kind of music that I love to listen mm-hmm. to, and it's fun. Like it's so much fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
God. And it's such a social dance in general, because especially house, it's all based around like just social dancing and dancing together to essentially quick hip hop music. It's very fun.
Yeah, do they do a routine in the beginning, or do they teach you something, or is it just you guys just moving to the music?
Yeah, so a lot of these classes that I take are more choreography based. So, and this is another thing that's been great for my brain is the structure of a dance class, because mm-hmm. usually there's like a warm up section at the top where you're stretching or doing like some grooves where you're just like getting your body into it, and then after that you will do like learn choreo. And like if you can pop into any dance class and it's usually this structure, unless of course it's like a social class, like there are different styles that will change. But in this world, it's usually like warm up, learn a choreo routine, and then you just do it over and over again. And like as you learn sections of the dance, you'll split into small groups and just do it. And then you'll go back, learn more, you'll add on, and then you'll do it again. And it's just very circular. I it's so good for my brain. And I was actually talking to somebody relatively recently about like writing styles and whether or not we like to like plan, like if it's a very linear structure when we're writing. And I realized that I write very circularly, and it was pointed out to me. I did not have this realization myself, but they were like, it's probably because you take so many dance classes, and dance was the first thing that you found, because in dance, what you'll learn is the first like steps, the first bit of the combination. You'll build out, you'll go back, you'll start at the beginning, and then you'll continue to grow it. And then you'll start at the beginning again, build out, and it keeps going that way. And that is also how I like write music and usually write comedy. I'll start with like one thing, I'll build out a ways, and then I'll go back to the start and like re-examine that and then continue on. Mm-hmm. I was very circular.
Huh. That must give like such an interesting flow to like your comedy sketches, because it's not like you're like, I have four jokes that I want to string together to make a sketch. It's like this mm-hmm. thing flows into this thing, organically goes into the next thing, organically goes into the next thing. And I'm assuming those are jokes too.
It's fun. I like it, but it's also hard because I can never like, I have such a hard time sitting down beforehand and beating something out like where I want it to go.
Yeah.
Like it's that's such a struggle for me, which is so hard in terms of sketch comedy or like plot based writing, because you want to know where you're going. Yeah. But I like there's something about the like joy of being like, oh, this realization there. That is kind of like also improv based,
yes,
I guess.
Yes.
But because you're like, oh, I found this thing right here, and that's going to change the next thing. Mm-hmm. It like, as opposed to being like, I want to get to there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I'm going to find my way there.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had an old comedy writing partner, and I came from an improv background, and she came from much more of like a theater, you know, writing background. And I was like, oh, our writing styles are so different. Because for me, it's like, absolutely. If the dialogue's starting, then let's just keep flowing with the dialogue. And let's, you know, what comes up is what gets put on the page, like improv. And for her, it was like 3 or 4 pages of background on each character that was going to be in the sketch before we write the sketch. And I was like, this is a good learning process for me, and I hate it. So how? Yeah.
I was just gonna say, I do love a lesson where you actively hate it as you're learning it. Those are my favorites.
Totally.
Oh, I hate this. Ooh, this is not for me.
Exactly. I was like, oh, okay, we're gonna check that off the list. Did it? Never need to do it again. Great. So, how did you get into improv?
I mean, it was actually just part of a weekly routine that I got myself into. Is like when I first moved to New York from Montana, I was working mostly in theater, and because after I started dancing, I got tricked into doing some musicals, and then just kept spiraling. This is not a life that I chose for myself. This was a life that was forced upon me by the people that wanted it. I love it, but those are this terrible terrible ethereal dance teachers. But literally every Sunday I would, because I live in Brooklyn, and I would go take a tap class up at Steps, which is on the Upper West Side. And then on my commute back down to Brooklyn, I would stop by UCB when it was in the Hell's Kitchen area here in New York. And I would wait in line, and I'd try to get a free ticket to the Ass Cat Show, which is Sunday night main stage, like flagship show. And that was just my Sunday routine. Every Sunday I would go dance, and then I would watch an improv show. And I had so much fun with it. And I was eventually like, I want to take these classes. Because when I was in musicals anyway, it was mostly like regional theater, that sort of stuff. And I was usually like the featured player in an ensemble, like that was the track, because I had a dance background. I was usually like in the ensemble, but was being silly, and I would come out and do like something silly and then go away. And I was like, I love doing this, and I had a lot of fun with being the silly little guy. So I was like, why not be a silly little guy more often?
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. I'm sure improv said yes, right this way. Join us. Yeah.
It was like, we'll see. But I kept trying.
That's so cool. Okay. So sorry, Heather.
Oh, I was going to say, it sounds like it was like a little clicky, you know? It's like,
yeah, like all institutions find their clicks, if you know what I'm saying. But I like to consider myself an indie darling.
Please, that should be.
I'm a self-proclaimed indie darling. Yes,
that should be in your bio. Self-proclaimed indie darling. That's beautiful.
I'm writing it down.
Oh, thank you.
So then did it go improv to sketch, or was sketch first?
It went improv to sketch, just because like improv is what I had access to. I also listened to a lot of podcasts at that point in like the Comedy Bang Bang Earwolf world, because like Montana, again, didn't have a lot of connection to stuff, but there I did have access to comedy that way. Mm-hmm. And so listened to a lot of improv, and I had taken like one sketch class before the world shut down, and we were building a sketch show. As like we had like formed a team from the class, and we were like, let's put up a show. And I had like a connection at like a little off Broadway theater that I had done a show at. So I was like, yeah, I'll produce it. And then like the world shut down the week before it. And so we were like, let's just keep meeting for writing meetings. And like until like so that we have a show when we're back. And then that spiraled into us meeting every week on Zoom for like the entirety of lockdown, to the point where we ended up, and it was just like an open room where people could come and pitch things. This is that sponsored by group. But at one point we had like 50 people on Zoom calls that all just wanted to be a part of like a comedy community. And it was people that had never done sketch before. Some people that loved writing sketch that could just come and like pitch ideas, and we would all like work on structure and build things. And then we did like online sketch. And then that's when sketch sort of became the main aspect of it is because it's what I had access to.
Mm-hmm. That is so cool.
That is. Yeah.
I loved it. I do love me some sketch.
Yeah. And like community too. That's.
Oh God.
Especially during lockdown. I mean, that's how I met Heather, was at a UCB online class. And it's just like, I don't know what I would have done if I wasn't taking classes during lockdown and having regular structure.
No, same. I also met Heather through an online class through UCB. And turns out Gabby as well. Even
Shout out to Thomas Lennon. Way to put us together. Yeah.
Thomas Lennon, big papa over there. Yes. I do owe a lot to Thomas Lennon, and he does not know who I am. I owe my show discount to him. lots of things.
Oh, that's cool. Speaking of discount, are you going to Edinburgh this year?
I am. Yeah. We're taking that show, which is like a clowny two-person show, to Edinburgh from the 1st of August to the 11th. We'll be performing at Just the Tonic there.
Cool.
Just the Tonic.
What time of day? What day of the week? All days?
00:10, which is just after midnight for those uninitiated like I was. I was like, I don't know what that means. It's the earliest and or latest show of the night. So... Nice. The vibe is very much a party. We took it to the Boom Chicago Comedy Festival in Amsterdam last summer, and we were the last show of the night, and the audience got so rowdy in like the best way that we literally had to shout "shut the fuck up" over and over at them, and, because we were over a half hour over. It was crazy. They all forgave us because everybody was having so much fun, but it's a party.
That's amazing. When you say clowny, do you mean like official clowning type thing, or what do you mean?
That's a great question. I because I'll often in passing say alt comedy to people because the uninitiated will often think honk honk red nose sort of clown.
Sure.
And it is less of that, and it's more in the like French style of like failure, like an idiot failing over and over again. And so the structure of that show is that we are doing a tribute to the 70s era, the disco era, and neither of us were alive then, neither of us know what that means, and so we're just making it up and being very confident about it and getting it wrong. Like one of my favorites, we have a bit where we find the script that they used to fake the moon landing, but it's a queer love story between Edwin Buzz Lightyear and Lance Armstrong. Nice. And it's dumb as hell. The whole show is dumb. It's bad. Don't come see it. It's so fun.
It sounds like a blast. Truly.
Yeah.
I do love it.
Yeah. That's so cool.
And one of my favorite parts is that like one of the first comedy communities like that I started performing in New York, because I was doing a lot of like musical comedy at the time because it was the thing that came most naturally to me. I was performing with like burlesque groups and comedy burlesque groups. And so a lot of my friends that are burlesque performers and drag queens, they're like, it's one of the ways that we can reach out and like include them in this like alt comedy scene, because like so many of the queer performing arts are also like so structured around the same thing that comedy is, but the worlds are not as intertwined as they should be. And so it's fun. So all of our guest acts on the show, when we have enough time to like the Edinburgh one, it's just like a solid hour that's mostly just Kendall and I. But when we have like a 90 minute variety show version of it, we will have like burlesque performers on, and it's always so fun. Oh, love me some Loosey Goosey. Moxie Mayday are our like our mainstays here when we're in New York. Love them.
Oh, gorgeous.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. My dog had something to say. Hi. Okay. That sounds amazing. Why?
Oh, and then also we want to mention Officer Scott.
Yes, we do. But I wanted to complain about being on the West Coast and not being able to see these performances. But as long as I got my grievance in, we're good. We're good.
Yeah. Well, there is this. We do often perform at a place here in the city called Caveat, which does live streams to wherever you are.
Ooh.
Like my monthly show, Duty Free, we always live stream, and you can watch that anywhere. And when we've done two discounts at this point at at Caveat as well. Mm-hmm. And I guess you didn't watch them, Gabby. Wow.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My dog ate my computer that day, and then the internet blew up. And so, you know how it is.
Oh my God, is your dog okay? This is terrible.
The dog's fine. The internet is bad. Bill Gates, okay, you know, 5G, et cetera.
Yeah.
What was I writing down? Oh, Caveat, discount. Here we go. Streaming.
I love me some Caveat. I'll shout out that venue. It's my favorite venue to perform at in New York. They're great.
How come? Why is it? Why is your fave?
Oh, everybody there is so lovely. They treat you so well as like a producer. The first time I ever produced a show there, they at the tech rehearsal, they had water and mints for us, and it's just the tech capabilities are lovely, and it's just. There's really, really wonderful vibes. And the whole like ish of it is that they'd like to do like an intellectual comedy or like nerdy comedy is their main thing. But they will also let someone like me, who's an idiot, come in and do stuff too. But they like really, really wonderful, wonderful venue.
That's so cool. Shout out Caveat. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't know that. Now I'm going to sell it everywhere.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great.
Okay. Getting back to what Heather was talking about, too much isn't enough. The Camden Fringe Festival. Yes.
Yeah. I'm also a part of a show called Officer Scott. Too Much Isn't Enough, which is one of my dear friends, Sloan Brett Holtz, has this clown character called Officer Scott. And I am lucky enough to be a part of it. It was funny because she asked for, does anyone want to dance in my clown show? And I was like, yeah, I'll learn an 8 count for you to do a little dancing behind a clown. And then I get to the first rehearsal and there's like a choreographer there and it's the most intense dance I've learned since I was doing regional theater. And I was like, oh no. But in like the best way, I was in for way more than I thought I was. And it's like the most theatrical comedy piece that I've ever been a part of. It's we just did the Atlanta Fringe a couple months ago, or like a month ago now. And it's so fun. It's about do y'all remember the DARE program?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So essentially, there's a volunteer officer comes in to lead a DARE program and stuff goes awry. But like my through line is that I am one of the teachers for, because it's very immersive in the sense that the audience is treated like fourth graders at an elementary school. Uh-huh. And I'm the gym teacher there who's like their, I can't think of the word, chaperone on the field trip. I also do a lot of like puppetry in the show. It's so clowny. It's so fun. I love it.
That sounds amazing too. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's like every show. Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Like, amazing.
I feel so lucky to get to do the dumbest things in the world.
But like so cool.
And you have, and then your music too. Yeah. I mean, geez.
I do love. Yeah. Thank you. That stuff's more like, that's my little like me stuff, because like if I ever just want to sit down and write something, it'll probably be music. And it's because I know what I sound like as me, and so when I do like projects or shows, I try to like find somebody that I would like to see how we work together and what we make when we do that. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm like sitting by myself and doing something, it usually just ends up being like music, something fun, like something emotionally cathartic, because I've got feelings too. But I love it. And it's the thing that I keep coming back to. So, and I think it'll be with me for a long time.
That's great. That's I hope you do, because you're constantly making music and it's, yeah, I'm always like, how is he doing this?
As you know, the secrets are depression and ADHD. The other night I was up at 2:30 in the morning making a beat because I couldn't do anything
else. That's right. Also, I'm sorry about that, but also congratulations for turning something not fun into something interesting. Where can people find your music?
Type in my name, Christopher Marucci, into like any streaming service, like Spotify, Apple Music, whatever you have. And it's like Morucci is the last name. There.
Great. I was just going to ask. So nice.
And then Christopher is spelled
357. Yeah. Yeah. You got one of those Elon Musk Grimes kids names that has, you know, just like 12 letters and numbers in them.
Yeah, I swooped in there early and got one of those.
Before they were all taken.
Yeah, like I always say, early and often when naming yourself.
That's good. Okay, but for real, Christopher is spelled how?
Oh, C-H-R-I-S-T-O-P-H-E-R.
Cool, cool, cool. I just want people to find your stuff, you know?
It's based in the Latin.
Okay, amazing, amazing. We've done depression. We've done ADHD. Mm-hmm. We've talked a little bit about anxiety. Do you got anything else about anxiety you want to talk about?
What does my anxiety want me to talk about? I don't know. I think anxiety is like the nice little intertwining state between all of them. Because it's the thing that's always there with me. it's my closest confidant. It's something that I am trying to work through probably the most regularly. Because I would say it's the thing that I struggle with the most in terms of like, I think it affects me negatively. And in so many like different ways in my life, but what a process that my therapist and I, that I really even have a hard time with now, but, and I've done it so many times, but if there's ever something that I am nervous, anxious about doing, I just like have to, and, but I know that I want to, should, and it is good for me to do. I can just like count down from five. And when, by the time I get down to zero, I just do it. And it's incredible. It works every time, but I never want to do it. It's the hardest thing in the world. And it's always something dumb. Like, should I text this person? And it truly is. I'll have to sit there and I'll be like, five, four, three. And I'm sweating. I'm like shaking. And then I'm like, hey, how's it going? And then I send it.
Wow.
I get so anxious about it.
Okay, yeah, that is very relatable, but also what a cool trick.
Yeah,
it's very good. It's very good.
And it always works for you?
Yeah, because like, I mean,
do you feel like it's like a dance count, like somebody's counting you in and you have to perform at that moment?
I would be counting it different. I'd be going five, six, yeah, seven, eight, and then hitting it. Don't you worry. I mean, sometimes I have done it, like I've had to count down multiple times because I'm like,
you're human.
I didn't press it. Okay, wait, let's start over. And then, but I've never not done it when I get down there, down to the nitty gritty aspects of it. But it is always something dumb. Like I hold myself up on the strangest little things. Like I can cold DM like a celebrity and ask them to be a guest on my show. But I truly am like, should I ask this person out to coffee? Oh God, what if it ruins my life?
Yeah, again, so relatable. It's like, you know, the distortion of like, I guess what normies would consider to be difficult versus like what normies would consider to be like very easy. I don't know.
Yeah.
Asking somebody out to coffee, there's all kinds of rejection there. But if it's a celebrity, like the baseline is they're going to say no. So that's great. Because then baseline is they say no, anything else is gravy.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like you're going to see the celebrity around unless, I don't know your life, that you could be hanging out with a lot of celebrities you're asking to do your shows all the time. I don't know.
No worries. I mean, the one instance where anxiety really got me, I was at an after party that Seth Meyers and Amber Ruffin were at, and I had like a full-on panic attack. And I like... I was like, you should talk to them. Like, you should try to talk to them. And I did a couple loops of the party, and it was hard because no one else that I knew was really there at that point. Ugh. And I was like, oh, and then I left. I had to leave because I was spiraling in the corner. There was somebody walking around with oyster shots, and I took one and I left. I had to get out of there. And then as I was walking the street after that, again, still spiraling, I texted my therapist and I was like, oh my God, I just ruined everything that's ever going to happen. I didn't take the shot. I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I didn't say hi. Uh-huh.
Well, because you know what was going to happen. Like immediately after you guys saying hi, the three of you would become BFFs. You would have all gotten the necklaces. Your career was going to take off. They were like, do you know what? We've been thinking that there needs to be a third late show that follows in the steps of Seth Meyers and Amber Ruffin. And
but on whatever the spinoff of Peacock is, on the train from NBC to Peacock to, I guess, just P or like, whatever that last one is. That's what I was thinking, but I forgot what the rating was on this podcast.
It's only for elementary school kids. So we say shit, fuck, piss, cock, you know, all the things that elementary kids really should be exposed to. Please don't put me on a list. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, so relatable. Like having one little tiny moment and being like, well, that's it. My whole career or my happiness in this life was based on me taking that shot of like talking to Amber and Seth, or I don't know, asking somebody out. Or for me, it's also like weird OCD type stuff where it's like, if I choose the wrong paint color, then, you know, I'm painting my apartment and that is going to be a whole path that I go down. My life is going to take, I'm going to become a doctor or like some idiot, you know, versus if I had taken the slightly yellow paint color, right? I could have followed my dreams and become a graffiti artist, whatever, you know. It's like, these are important decisions that are not important.
Is your dream to become a graffiti artist?
It is not.
Well, then why would you lie to us like that?
I know. I was ready to hire you and, you know, paint something. Uh-huh. I don't know.
I would show up with a can of spray paint like, huh? She's got it. My dream is definitely like to be a stand-up. My dream is honestly to have a late night talk show a la Seth and Amber and that type of thing. But, you know, it's too precious to say out loud. And now I've jinxed it and it's never going to happen. So we're good.
We're good.
It's fine. White knuckle. Okay. So is your anxiety kind of like a constant companion with you like throughout the day? Or did you mean it's more of like the connective tissue in between perfectionism, depression, and, you know, ADHD, you know?
I think probably a little bit of both. Depending on like where I'm at with a mindfulness practice is really like, really does impact how I feel anxiety wise. Because like it's like a practice. It comes and goes. I'm not currently meditating every day, but there are some points where like I will do like a guided meditation every night before I go to bed. But like currently things are a little bit more stressful in my brain. And so I'm listening to improv podcasts where they're just like literally rambling and I can like zone out on nothingness. And then that's the only thing that puts me to sleep.
Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, not to talk too much about the world, but things are constantly
the
like
best.
I'm dipping in and out of I'm dipping in and out of just pure joy and ecstasy. anytime I'm reading the New York Times, I'm like, ooh yeah, what a great day. What a great day for me personally and everyone else on this planet. Talking with the Officer Scott crew literally last night, we were building a community agreement sort of thing where we were talking about like things that we would like while working with each other. And one was like, when we like zoom out, like if we ever get too caught up on the minutia of something, we can always zoom out and remember that we are doing something that is just purely to bring people joy. And it's just like the hardest we can be on ourselves is that like, oh, we weren't quite as silly as like. It is not world ending. We get to do the fun thing, and we are doing the fun thing, and it should be fun.
Yeah,
that is.
But I definitely say, like these days, I'm pretty anxious all of the time, and it is more about like trying to be mindful in a way that brings me into presence, like a state of presence that again is not ignoring the happenings of the world, because I think that's the other side of things is I don't want to become oblivious. I don't want to, anytime that I talk to somebody that's like not political or not like involved in that thing, I'm just like, but that's an excuse to be ignorant in many ways. Like, they're like, that is also not helping you or anyone around you, because everything is connected. So when I like try to sit with mindfulness and like think about things, it's usually like, how can this get better? Like, what is the way to like that, both for me in this situation, like I'm feeling anxious, how can I do something that usually like first and foremost impacts the people around me in a way that feels good, because I have a harder time making myself feel good. But if I can help others or contribute in some way, that will then help me feel good, which is also something that I'm working on in therapy, because that's not necessarily the healthiest thing, but I'm a helper.
It seems to be helping you. I mean, you're still sitting with your anxiety, right? You're not making your anxiety go away. It's your anxiety is kind of passing through you staying present, and then thinking about, like, as we talked about, like values, you know, thinking about the things you want to work on, thinking about the things that you care about. I think that all sounds good.
Thank you.
But do you find yourself, like, when you're talking about this stuff with your therapist, do you find that it's hard to prioritize yourself? Does that make sense? Since you're thinking about how can you help other people, how can you stay aware of all the stuff that's going around in the world? Yeah. How do you prioritize yourself?
Yeah. I feel like my therapist just entered the chat.
Yeah. The copay has gone up, by the way.
But yeah, absolutely. It's something that impacts me in a lot of ways. That I derive like external motivation for things often more than internal motivation. Like my commitment to making sure that I don't drop the ball on something that I'm working with somebody else on is higher than my own personal projects. But then on even in terms of like relationship structures and things, I often will find myself sacrificing more in terms of like what I am like okay with, as opposed to or like what I'll put in. I'm usually the one that like offers up more, which is in itself not healthy and draining in terms of like a healthy relationship dynamic. Things should be equal, and I'm often willing to push past that to my own joy, my own brilliance. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the current. That's one of the very real current struggles and goals.
Again, so relatable.
Yeah. Very much so. Yeah.
Okay. Just because I feel like my current therapy is also entering the chat, so we can strike this from the record. Feel free. How are you with stating like your needs and wants, let's say in a relationship situation? Like, is it harder for you to state those things and easier to just sacrifice? Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. 100%, 1000%.
Okay, great.
It's like, yeah. Yeah, okay, great. It's definitely how I feel about it.
Cool.
Okay, great. This is perfect.
It's fine.
I love that for us.
Yeah. I hold this position for like ever. Exactly. You know, so it's fine.
Exactly. It is so hard for me to feel justified in like voicing my own feelings or wants in things often. And not just like necessarily in like romantic relationships, but oftentimes ever. Like it's hard for me. Like I've been in situations where people are like, how do you feel about this person? And I'm like, well, I don't like necessarily love working with them because they've not been like the nicest to my friends. And they're like, I've also seen them be mean to you. And I'm like, oh, that's good point too. I forgot about that. yeah, that too. But it's truly the things that I'm more conscious of and more willing to like speak up about are the ones that are not directly involving my own personal happiness or like my own wants.
Yes. Okay. Follow-up question.
Yeah.
Does part of that stem from not trusting your own perception of what is happening to you and trusting more like, I see this happening to somebody that I care about, ergo I see that it's like, if somebody's yelling at a friend of mine, then I'm going to say like, hey, you need to stop yelling at my friend right now. Somebody yelling at me, I'm like, hey, did I do something wrong here? I probably did something wrong here. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. The perception of it all Yeah, absolutely. That's a great way of framing it. I definitely know that, like, just in terms of my own perception of, like, self-worth and, like, not necessarily, like, deservingness of it, but, like, I mean, I guess essentially, like, how much do I deserve to also be treated kindly? Like, that also, it might not be the thing that I'm thinking about, but it definitely shades in the experience of these situations, for sure. No way around that.
Yeah, the whole taking up space. Heather and I talk about that a fair amount. It's like, do I deserve to take up space in any situation? Which is fascinating to me, because then you have people like our former president who never have that question go across their minds. You know, they're he's never like, oh, am I taking up too much space in this room? Like, physically, emotionally, energetically? No. I don't know.
Yeah, level of blind confidence or
I just want a little bit, you know? I just want tiny, tiny little bit to be like, I'm in this room and I deserve to be here. Hello.
Oh my God. Whoa.
I'm sorry.
I've never even heard of that. It's so funny. Because I was even thinking about, like, I feel pretty powerful when I perform, but then at the same point, I'm like, but I also do know that my favorite way to perform is one where I'm on the back foot, where I'm like lower in status than the audience is. And I'm like, I guess really, whoa, oh, what does that say about me? Where I'm like, my favorite times I've ever had while performing is where I've fully lost control of the situation and I have to fight for it back. And I'm just like, I gotta win anything. Like, that's always when I'm having the most fun, when I'm like the most excited. But at that same point, it's when I have the least control.
Yeah. So, again, another jump, people pleasing. How do you feel about that?
Oh, it's great. I do it all the time.
Yeah, cool.
Can't stop doing it. I'm doing it all. Yeah, that's even like a year ago, I started a process of trying to say no to more things and just being like, no, I don't need to be a body with no lines that'll take up 3 hours of my night and 2 more hours commuting. I have other things going on. No, I love you. I do love you, my friend. But I do not need to be the person laying on the floor. Like,
yes. Okay, I hope that actually happened. I hope that you said no in that way.
Oh, no, I said yeah. I use an example of something that I did. Oh, was I supposed to do it the other way? That absolutely happened.
Okay, yeah. So the way that you say no is to say yes. Also, can I pick up coffees for everybody else? Is there any dietary restrictions? And
no, I think that was a 3-show week of that of that one. So don't worry.
Oh boy.
And it wasn't 2 hours of commuting; it was actually 3.
Yeah.
Because the bus didn't go.
Yeah, man. What is that? I wonder if it's like a. If this is just like a flavor of creatives, you know what I mean? Or if it's like a mentals thing that like...
I definitely... My perception leads more onto the mentals thing just because I have so many people in my life that aren't like this. Right? And then I'm like, I know it's not all of us. Like, I know this is a special few that really, really love living in this space.
Yeah. Do you think it has something to do with rejection?
Ooh. Oh yeah. I mean, it's interesting because like I think that one of the reasons why I've survived as a performer as long as I have is because I like got my like degree in psychology first, and I like have good like coping mechanisms in that regard. Mm-hmm. But still, like most of my day is spent getting rejected by things, like because it's all like so many like auditions, so many submissions, so many packets, so many like. Just so many little no's that like are sort of a constant sea of no's that really do become desensitizing at some point. But it like each one, you still feel it. It's just like you sort of have to like not let it hurt you in that way. It can't stop you. But oh my God. And even the like little things like like the little mistakes and things when I'm like, oh, I messed up. Like, I did a music show not too long ago. One of the, like, the last show that I did where it was just like me doing just music, fully went up on my own lyrics. And I was like, oh, I bombed. I had not like bombed that hard in a while in terms of like, I just fully messed up. I forgot my lyrics and I couldn't get back into it. And I just like mumbled for a little bit. And I was like, well, I guess that's just how that is. And it's fully impacted the way that I've been like writing music now. I'm like, should I do this anymore? Like, like working through those like little things, like the own personal like self rejections where I'm like, this is not good anymore. But I'm like, but I'm good. This happens to everybody. Everybody fails. Everybody like makes mistakes. Everybody gets rejected. Everybody gets no's. But I'm trying to like not internalize it too much. But it like it's that hard thing of like the internal self-critic that keeps you like good and protects you and like makes you grow. And then the internal self-critic that's like, you should stop. You are bad at this. And like figuring out like which edge of that sword to sharpen. Yeah. And it, oh God, it's so tiring.
I didn't realize there were two self-critics like that. That is so cool, honestly, that one is there to help you and one is there to kill you. Yeah.
That's something that I've like, that's how I view it just in terms of like, because I do know that like, I do have to like, I do have to be aware of how I'm doing. If I want to like grow, if I want to like make this thing better, I have to be aware of like, the little like successes, failures, like the critique. It's like the taste part of it all. It's like the reason why we like want to be artists is because we like I loved comedy and that's why I wanted to make comedy. My favorite thing to do is go sit at a comedy show and laugh. Like I love being in the audience. And that's because I have good taste. I love these favorite comics. I'm just trying to like make my own stuff to where I like it. And so like everything that I've ever made, even like the early stuff that I no longer like, I try to be aware like, oh, I had to make that though. Like I had to make that to make the things that I'm making now. Because like that journey, if I'm going to keep getting better, I need to like know like, oh yes, these are the things that I wouldn't do again. I wouldn't do it this way. I would like to keep growing this way. And I do view that as like the self-critic, like the internal critic, but I'm trying to like be kind with myself in that way. Where it's like, but these are still a part of me. These are an example of like this screenshot of time, this snapshot of like, I can't believe I said screenshot of time because it's because I'm looking at a computer, but like this picture of like a moment in my life. Like, like that came from that. And that's great. That's what needed to happen. And now I can like use all of that past stuff to help make the next thing better. But I also can't let that same person be like, this still isn't good. Like I can't let that stop it.
Yeah.
Yes. To everything. Yes.
Sorry, I feel like I just talked for 4 hours.
No. It was great. I was just trying not to like verbally say like because I didn't want to talk over you because you know audio format. But at the same time, I'm just like 1,000%. Keep going. Yeah. Has your or have you come across the whole rejection sensitivity disorder that comes with ADHD? Have you heard of that?
I don't know if I do off the top of my head.
So apparently we're like extra sensitive to rejection. So the fact that like you have it's that checking out. The fact that you have chosen this profession where you do get little rejections like every day and have allowed yourself to kind of form a callus towards that. I mean, not that it's perfect and nothing, you know, gets past it and whatever else, but is really freaking cool, you know, like because the rejection sensitivity, I find it very paralyzing for me. Oh, and I was going to ask you, so when you like mess up in your show, forgot your lyrics, does that, if you let it, will it become something that you ruminate on? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mm. No, I do know what you mean. And the answer is yes. Yeah. That's the sort of thing that perfectionist in me loves. Like it loves to think about that for the rest of my goddamn life. Loves to hold that in the back pocket when I ever try to do that again. But it's that comfort that something that also really helped in like at a certain point in therapy. I can't remember what the main thing that my therapist and I were talking about, but I had just like gotten back into doing like hip hop improv, like freestyling improv, which is I was one of the teams that I'm on is Bar None, lovely people, and like one of our coaches, his name is Ralph Jean Pierre, also has a podcast that's awesome. It's No Suggestion. It's highly recommend. Nice. Sometimes I co-host with him. He's lovely. He's like big in the clown world, but also like hip hop improv. There's so much of it that you just have to be okay with not getting it right. Because not only is it musical improv where you are, the choices that you're making from an improv standpoint are moving so much faster, mm-hmm. making much larger choices, mm-hmm. because you're singing and you have to do it to a tempo, to a rhythm, to music, and it's got to keep moving. It's also now hip hop, which structurally moves faster and it rhymes. And so like you gotta do a lot of stuff to keep ahead of yourself. And you just got to accept that, like, you will not get it right. You will miss rhymes. But you will also, these things that happen just naturally are now the world. That's what's going on. You just keep going. And it was so good for me to be in a situation where it's like, I just have to accept everything that's happening. And it's coming at me like a train.
Yes.
Like I have to get on that train and go with it. Otherwise I am getting hit by a train. Like those are the two options there. And it was so good. It's so good for me. I love it.
Yeah, I completely agree. One of the things I've been complaining about on this podcast is not doing improv in person, because the quick pace of improv and my perfectionism cannot exist Mm-mm. in the same moments, right? So yeah. It's not as fast as improv hip hop, because I can't even, like, that's so impressive that you do that.
I truly think everybody can.
I cannot, but I have other skills and I'm okay with that, you
okay.
know?
Okay.
I bet you could do it, Gabby, because you're pretty quick.
I'm quick.
I bet you could do it too, Heather.
Yeah. Okay, ready? The three of us. Here we go. One, no. two, three. Heather, don't you know that it's time to start rhyming? And everybody here wants to know about your timing.
We're gonna See, I told you.
We got a couple of,
cut that from the pod. that was terrible. But improv was therapy for my perfectionism before I ever realized that that's what it was. Like,
no, same.
Right? And if I have access, like if I'm doing it regularly once a week, twice a week, whatever, then it just kind of like flushes out the idea of perfection and allows me to hold on to the moment, right? And also building stuff with other people. I love that about improv, you know, like you're building a world, you're with somebody on stage, with multiple people on stage, and the collaborative nature of that is just
No, it's I couldn't agree more. I love that. And also I know part of me, one of the reasons why I love performing in general is that I'm self-medicating for ADHD in terms of like dopamine, like the adrenaline, all of it, like with the deadlines that come with it, the like literal pressure, the like make or break fail state that happens there. Mm-hmm. It all is me finding, because like I've also been sober for my entire life, because it, like once I got off of like those medications when I was in like high school, I just have been sober. So like the things that I fiend for are like performance related. I guess performance related drugs are a real thing. like I could no longer play baseball or something
Yeah. But blood doping and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not doing that. That's not what I'm saying. But don't check my B.
Yeah, but exactly. Let the record show that there is an IV with blood currently going from. Yeah, but anyway.
Yes, I did pass the P test that Gabby and Heather made me take to get on the podcast.
To be fair,
it was so weird.
Said,
I had to send two cups to each of their home addresses.
Said, please don't do that, and yet the P did arrive. So I don't know, there was a miscommunication. I'm gonna say
it was a miscommunication. Somebody's agent said something wrong. And now they both ended up with my urine, and I don't know what's happening.
But you passed with flying colors.
Thank you. Oh, the colors are good? Good.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Yeah, it was, I did mean to talk to you about the color of your urine. It was sort of a neon green, and I just, mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. You may want to get
the way
out.
It should
okay,
be.
Okay, yes.
The way that God intended.
Yeah, it was more opaque than translucent. That also might be the viscosity of it was more of a
solid. I think I might have sent you paint.
Oh, that's what that is. I knew I recognized
Oh, that's why my walls are so.
Yes, exactly. Do you know, it's the perfect color because I'm redoing the bathroom. So it's.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. From urine to You're urine, welcome. From funk to funky. I believe that performance is a type of junkie. No, I don't know. That was I'm in a rhyming thing. So but I agree with you. Do you also get because I still will get very nauseous before every performance. I will think to myself, this is so stupid. You should not be doing this. You should be, I don't know what, like a library catalog person, and performance is not for you. And then the instant I get on stage, that dopamine, that like communication with the other performers, the interaction with the audience, it's like, oh yeah, I'm a fish, this is water, I like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I also like to try to identify it's the sort of CBT of it all, where I'm like, is this feeling anxiety or is this excitement? Like, ooh. And like labeling the thing that I'm feeling.
Yeah.
And I actively try to be like, all right, this is because I care about it. Like this feeling that I have is me excited. I am nervous, but excitement and nervousness like feel the same in my body. Mm-hmm. And I can label it however I want to, but it truly just comes down to the fact that I care about this thing that I want to do and I'm about to do. Mm-hmm. And it's good that I'm feeling it, because when it stops is when I think I should stop, because I no longer am emotionally invested in it.
Yes. Oh, my God. 1,000 times. Yes.
Yeah.
Great use of cognitive behavioral therapy. Shout out to CBT. Also, a friend of mine was dating a man and she was
gross.
I know. Exactly. That is part of the story, actually. So, so she was dating a man and she was having to take like a significant amount of like Xanax or something every time they went on a date. I didn't know about this till afterwards. And she was like, I think I'm just so excited to be around him. And I was like, okay. But then we talked about it. And then it turned out, no, she was nervous and terrified. And they both showed up the same way in her body. Right. And so then she's gay. So it turned out that that was a big part of it, too.
Well, I call it.
Yes, you did. Yeah. And then and I think I was one of the first people she told and I was like, yes. Thank God. It makes so much sense. Just one of her, she had only one, when she was dating men, she had only one thing that she was looking for in a man. And that was that they were taller than her. And I was like, not kind or a sense of humor or smart or good with animals, like just taller than you. Yep. And now that she dates, you know, women, the list is a lot longer and makes a lot more sense. Like she's looking for a compatible person, you know?
That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I like to rib her about it. Anyway.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
I did once match with somebody on an app that the first message that they said was, how tall are you? Even though it was like, it's on all of the apps. They all have your height. But I was like, I'm 5'8". And they're like, I'm over it. And immediately unmatched me. And I was like, whoa.
Are you serious?
It was, yeah, it was in the second it hurt. But immediately after I started laughing, because I was like, that was brutal in a way that is so funny. It was a 3-message correspondence. How tall are you? 5'8". I'm over it. Unmatched. It was and it was not like one of those ones where there was time in between. It happened so fast.
I just feel like that is a troll that just goes on dating apps specifically. Like, even if you had answered 6'4", they would have been like, I'm over it. And then unmatched you, you know, they're just there to bring people down a peg.
And I need it. Oh, if there's one thing my self-esteem needs, it's like, oh, yeah, let's go ahead and kneecap them today. Let's get this a little lower.
Yeah, seriously, because, you know, the amount of confidence that you're, like, beyond confidence, it's, like, unearned, you know, that you're just, like, pouring all over this podcast mm-hmm. here, right, is a lot.
No, don't worry. I walked in with big 6'4 energy today.
The height thing always flummoxes me. As a woman who dates men, I have heard that a lot from guys that it's like a deal breaker for a lot of women. But I don't know. I've dated a lot of short dudes. They still
have. And you know what? You're doing the Lord's work.
Yeah, I'm doing the Lord's work. I mean, they still have terrible personalities. It doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, that's the constant. Yeah.
No, they all do. Yeah. That's the thing.
And everybody's taller than me. So I'm only 5. Well, I tell people I'm 5'3", but technically I'm 5'2¾". So I know.
Heather, have you been lying?
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
I've been lying this whole time.
So Christopher, I need a new podcast host because apparently mine is just like a total liar. Do you know what I'm saying?
And no, I hear you, and I respect this choice. I do have to again say that the bio of the podcast, the OCD thing, I don't fit that one, but I'm down to lie about that. Great. If you're down for a drop on one lie for
no, that's fine. It's just as long as you don't lie about your height. You know what I mean? Because that's what's important. I won't.
I would never do that. I would never
do it. Don't do it, man. Heather, I love that when you describe your height, 3/4 of an inch popped in. Like, that was some serious, like,
it's very important.
3 5/8. That's how old I am. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
I'm this many tall.
Yes. This is how many months old I am.
I think that means that you're 5'3". I think you're 5'3". Yeah,
well, fine. Sometimes in the doc, like, the doctors will go, oh, you're 5'2". I'm like, nope, 5'3".
Do you hold
all right now I see what's happening. I now see what's happening. okay. So Heather is shorter than she thinks she is.
My mom says she's 5'2", but she's actually under 5 feet, so I can see over her head.
Slam.
Oh yeah.
Total tangent. Here we go. Have you guys seen the surgeries that people do to get taller where they cut the shin bone and they put we should put a little trigger warning or something. Anyway, trigger warning
bones. But you're cutting through bone.
Yeah. And then the
comedy also cutting into that bone.
That's the other part of the podcast. It's just medical horrific oddities as well. Uh-huh. Anyway, they basically put your bone in traction and you turn these screws so that your bones separate by a little bit more every single day. And then the bone grows between them and it can take like a year or something like that for them to gain like an inch or something. But because people really value height, they're willing to go through this like awful painful process. So I'm just saying, anybody else in, you guys want to do this with me? You guys
So somebody did tell me about this recently and I didn't think about it. Like, I was just like, huh. Everything about it sounds horrible to me, but I mean, I would be down to be a little taller.
I mean,
so you can grow like a half an inch.
I know, that's what I want to know. How much of a gain in height would this be worth it for you?
That's true. I mean, I could also, one, work on my posture.
Two,
but that's too hard.
Volume.
I'd like to cut my bones.
Seriously, fluff up the hair, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, volume in this direction. Also, heels exist, and I wish more male-identifying people would wear heels because I think they're sexy on all genders.
No, I agree. I have like worn heels while performing before. And it's so fun. It's also way easier to turn when you're already in releve, which is one of the many reasons why I've always been saying women just have it so much easier.
I'm always turning in releve too. And
exactly. People are always like, the money, the body, the control of their own bodies. But I'm like, you can turn. I'm like, you're already up there.
You don't need Row.
We can cut that out of the podcast, right?
I'm cutting it all out.
Yeah, exactly. This whole podcast is going to be 30 seconds. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Christopher. Silence. You don't hear my voice.
Yeah. We did actually have a podcast like that where my recording didn't go through. So it's just Heather talking to herself, apparently. And I say we release it. Yeah.
Well, but I'm also like in scatter. It's like it makes. Yeah, no, I'm not going to release it.
It's so funny. That happened to me when I was guesting on another friend's podcast. And what happened is he asked if I would ADR my own voice in a way that like it made it like a fun improv game for me. Uh-huh. So because like we met up and re-recorded like a new episode. But then I was also like, send me the file of just you talking and I'll have a one sided conversation with you for an hour. And it truly was unhinged. This was the height of lockdown. This was when I needed things to do. And so I had a fake conversation with a real friend that where I was trying to both remember where it was going so I could lead us there and actively fuck with it. Like it was very fun.
Did you guys ever release it?
Yeah, it's out on it's my buddy Noah Friend's podcast, the Noah Friend Power Hour. I'm sorry, I'm
plugging
so many
love
other
it,
podcasts.
I truly do love
another great show. I don't think an episode's come out in a while, but y'all can get your fans to demand that he has another, because anytime I'm on, I call them the Christopher Marucci Power Suchis.
That's amazing.
What other podcasts are you listening to?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, OK. These ones are what I call future friends. Someday I'll know these people.
Yes.
One of my favorite podcasts that I love to listen to is Hey Riddle Riddle, which really shows deep things about what my brain needs. It's a riddle podcast that three improvisers do where they give each other riddles. Oh, also I should say they all hate it. They give each other riddles and then they do improv scenes based around the riddles.
Amazing.
What a joy. Amazing. And they're just marvelous people. It's Adil Rafai, Aaron Keefin, JPC. Highly recommend that one. Okay. My other favorite go-to podcast these days is Dungeons and Daddies. Love me that show. The first season is about four soccer dads that all get sucked into the Forgotten Realms and they have to rescue their lost kids.
Yes.
And each dad becomes like the dad version of whatever D&D archetype they are. It's very fun. Like, and I can't wait to one day be friends with all of these people. Yes. In a weird parasocial way where I've known them for years.
Yeah. And you're like dropping inside jokes that they have that you aren't privy to yet, but you're like, no, I know. Yeah. We're good.
And my head's always a little bit like this. I'm always like cocked to the side. My eyes are really wide. And I just show up.
Yeah. Like a sleep paralysis demon.
Yes, that's a great way to describe me.
Good recommendations. Do either one of you listen to Attitudes? It's not improv per se, but it's two comics comic actors that I really enjoy, Brian Safi and Aaron Gibson, and they discuss.
I love both of them.
What? You know them?
I love both of them.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. From like the. Yeah. They used to,
Throwing Shade was their old.
Thank you. Yeah. That I listened to Throwing Shade.
Yes.
That's what
So it's called Attitudes now because they realized that two white people using Throwing Shade was slightly problematic.
That tracks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I love them and I love how unhinged their improv gets with each other, where like one person will just start talking about something, the other person will misinterpret, and then they just keep going. I'm just like, yes, that makes me so happy.
That's so good.
And also they get really angry about, you know, like current news issues. And I'm like, yeah, that's the amount of like world politics I can handle today. Tomorrow I'll get back into it, but today.
Yeah. I feel that. I remember them both also from that show with Paul F. Tompkins, that was like, I can't remember what channel it was on. It was a lot like a TV show.
Really?
That was sort of like a weekly sort of pop culture-y thing.
Oh, yeah. It was called like, yeah. Shoot.
That was the first time I ever saw them.
Uh-huh.
I loved them.
It was called like What's Happening Last Week or This Is Your Face. One of those.
Yeah. I think the first one was closer to the second than the second one, but that's just
I thought it was
guess.
The whole line. It was the whole line.
Yeah. All right, buds. How's everybody doing who doesn't have two old dogs on their lap?
Wishing I had two old dogs on my lap. Also, I am going to be starting a new podcast called This Is Your Face. It'll come out every Thursday at midnight. So everybody check it out. I already got a deal with Spotify.
Yeah, it's bigger than Rogan's deal, right? It's $200 million.
Yeah. And the Smartless Boys, bigger than that, too. Yeah.
Oh,
well. Bigger than Conan. Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm. No. Conan's still number one. The Podfather. He invented podcasting, right?
Yeah.
Like two years ago. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact that he was able to sort of like time travel to put all the other podcasts out there as if they've been happening for years.
Cool. Yeah. It's so cool.
I mean, if you
what a nice guy.
Yeah, if you have access to time travel, the first thing you do is not kill Hitler. It is definitely populate the world with podcasts over a decade and a half previous.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I do have a fun story about Conan O'Brien that it does not have me in it, but my mom. Because they went to school at the same time. He was older than she was. But there was a story that she said where the comedy newspaper, they were all drunk and wandering the streets of Boston. And they like picked up my mom and her friend and carried them down the street singing. So Conan O'Brien carried my mom down the streets of Boston singing a song while she was in college. And so that's how I know Conan O'Brien's my father, and he needs to respond to my emails and let me on the podcast.
But it's where you get your height from, for sure. And
that ginger hair.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I do have a red beard. But.
Congratulations.
Papa.
Oh, which reminds me, your grandmother was a witch?
Yeah. Oh, I forgot that. I was like, how the fuck did you know that?
Because I am also...
I forgot that was in that Google Doc. My mom, this was maybe a year ago now, but we were just on the phone and she's like, well, you know how your great grandmother was a witch, right? And I was like, what? Mom, what are you talking about? I've never heard this before. And she's like, yeah, she could tell the future. And I was like, huh? Yeah, all she needed was a Bible and a key. And I was like, what? and she could tell you anything. She could tell people. She always used to tell people who they were going to marry. And then one day she stopped because she saw something she didn't want to see. And I was like, oh, my God.
Wow.
Truly unhinged. Truly unhinged.
Amazing. My grandma's played golf. Anyway, it's been really nice having you on the podcast.
No, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Truly, Christopher, this has been an absolute joy. And
yeah, thank you all so much for the time.
Yes. Please feel free to come back if you have any therapy breakthroughs you want to tell us about, or if you got any more like creative stuff that you want to talk about. I think right now we should also reiterate that you're going to be at Edinburgh and at the Camden Fringe Festival. Do you want to plug those real quick once again?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so the month of August, I'm doing a European tour of two places, and it's and two different things. So they're unrelated, but I'm going to be doing Discount the Disco Variety Show at the Edinburgh Fringe from August 1st to the 11th, and tickets are available in my link tree on my Instagram. And then I'll be doing Officer Scott, Too Much Isn't Enough at the Camden Fringe at the end of August as well.
Woohoo.
Okay. Absolute pleasure having you. This has been so fun. Yes. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for going deep and also getting quite silly and all the things. We appreciate it.
Oh, man. What a joy. And next breakthrough I have, as soon as I'm fixed, I'll be back. I'll be back on and it'll be a totally different conversation, much calmer, much
we don't want
much
that.
More
we
like
don't
even
want
keel.
That.
We don't want that. We don't want that.
Okay, cool.
You stay
also
broken
bring
with
more
the rest
podcasts.
Of us.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Bring more
hell yeah.
Podcast
I got you.
Recommendations.
I was about to have a really good rest of my life, but don't worry.
Yeah,
I won't.
Yeah, thank you. I feel really responsible for your happiness at this point, so I feel like,
and you should.
Uh-oh. Okay. Two dogs.
Oh.
cute.
Nobody's happy. That is a very professional way to end a podcast. Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, of course. My God. Thank you.
And thank you so much, Heather. And you guys are both great people and deserve happiness. So deal with it.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Okay. That was it. Bye, everyone.
Bye, 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 bye,
bye.
Bye, bye. Welcome to the end of the show. This is Gabby Blackman.
And this is Heather Nye.
Thank you for listening to Comically Exposed. We're just a little show with two creators who edit and produce each episode. We appreciate all your support.
If you like what you heard, please follow us on Instagram at comicallyexp.podcast. That's comicallyexp.podcast.
Oh, and check out our website at comicallyexposed.com. That's one word, comicallyexposed.com.
Where you can contact us by text or even leave a voice message.
Or subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. New episodes drop every other Wednesday.
Also, special thanks to Track Club and Goldenfinch for providing the music.
Thanks for listening. And hey, everybody, today is a great day to expose yourself. Okay, until next time.
In your face, Miriam.
Thank you.